the Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast. This is Bobby Golden. Like always, I have Jason Bond with me, and today we have Drew Golson, who has replaced Jason Kreutz last year as the water specialist. Is that
there? You go.
You know, is that your name? Because we used to call Kreutz the water boy, because he used to call me Bobby Boucher.
Water specialist, irrigation specialist, any of those work.
Kreutz can pull off water boy there.
So, Drew, tell us a little bit about yourself. I know you've been here, what, how many months now?
I guess we're on, 13, 14 months? Last April.
You're welcome for the timely introduction.
The last 2 months have flown by, but it's been busy. This year has we've talked about this earlier, but this summer is a lot different than my first summer coming through here. So I started last April, right on April 1st, and it's been wet since then, and it's really stopped since this past summer, this growing season, and it has been a big difference. And I appreciate the first growing season of last year, because that allowed me some time to settle in, assess what was going on, and really be able to see what that's going on without being pulled in all different directions.
So as a native Texan, it probably took you about that long to get acclimated to the Delta.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. We moved here, and like I said, in April. I got two little kids, 6 and 8. And we're really enjoying it. We're fitting in well.
Jason is a lifelong Delta resident. Have no acclimation.
No, man. I was born acclimated to the Delta.
Oh, goodness. All right. Well, Drew, so tell us a little bit about what you do in that role. You pretty much work with all the crops, right?
Yeah. So came over here. I work across really all of them. Rice, soybeans, cotton, corn. Have projects across them all. Extension specialist as well, and so I try to do, especially from the irrigation standpoint, try to get on farm as much as I can. Do what we can on farm to evaluate irrigation practices. From small scale research and controlling water through a fur irrigation system can be hard. So when we can get on farm, evaluate those. And
so Jason and I were riding the other day, and he said, hey, I think you ought to start watering your corn. And the guy said, yeah, probably need to. So I know you're doing a lot of work with sensors and stuff. So what are they telling you right now? Where's most of the corn crop at in the Delta in regards to water needs?
Yeah. So we've across what we have set up, whether we're doing research on farm or where we got sensors scattered out throughout farmers to just as a demo, every place is going to be a little bit different, but generally, right now, the sensors are telling us that it's good. The soil moisture is in there; it's good. Just depending on the growth stage of where it is, if you're week or so up to tassel, that's the time you want a full bank of soil moisture in your soil profile to make sure it has adequate soil or adequate moisture during that time. But we utilize soil moisture sensors to help trigger or schedule our irrigation. I think you can add a few days for the most part. And what I saw, especially last summer, it seemed like we got a pop-up shower about every 10 days, at least across where I was. And prolonging those irrigation initiations just for a couple of days, we're able to capture a rain, and it made a big difference on our farm, on-farm trials. And so, one of the first questions, it's a lot easier to me to answer that question when somebody asks, is it time to irrigate, is if they have soil moisture sensors in their soil. I help answer that direct question. Otherwise, we're using what we can. I'm using other soil moisture sensors to try to extrapolate what may be going on there. And then, if you can't, then you don't want to, last thing we want to do is hurt yield. And so we're going to go ahead and start irrigating without that soil moisture sensor.
Do you have any sense of the number of acres that we have that's being monitored you know, with a sensor, some kind of way.
Just say for corn example, yeah. You know, what we're talking about.
Just through, you know, through, you're talking about through farmers.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a guess. You know, people ask me, you know, how many acres do I think get a pre-herbicide? I don't.
Yeah, I know. That's real. It's so hot. So, I mean, you got surveys, the NAS, Irrigation Water Management Survey, that came out, well, last year, but it's 2018 data.
Right.
And I believe Mississippi, we're at about 15 to 20% have responded that they use soil moisture sensors.
That's a decent percentage.
Oh yeah, nationally, that's quite a bit above everybody else. Most folks are quite a bit lower than that. So no, that's good, and that's good.
So y'all are talking about sensors, and there's multiple different sensors out on the market, and some of those act differently and read moisture differently and can be interpreted differently. So kind of walk us a little bit through that and maybe what's some that you like.
Yeah. So the two main, as far as the sensor, and it can get to such a complicated conversation when we talk about sensors, because, you know, you got your watermark sensors, your granular matrix sensors that are going to give you the cinnabar readings. And those are the numbers that a lot of folks, a lot of farmers use or like to use more often, because it's a red light, green light type of situation. You can get a number, and if you tell me this, don't let it go past this number, then that's easy to understand. It's easy to plan for. It's easy to manage. And we have syntax sensors, volumetric, a little more relative on as you're watching those graphs go, and you're trying to judge when that water being pulled by that plant, when it tapers off, and then you can look at that and make that judgment call to whenever you feel like you need to, that plant needs extra water, excess water to come into the system. As far as what I think folks are using, majority of them are going to be your watermark sensors. And then you go beyond this actual sensor probe, then you've got so many dashboards or systems or companies, whatever you want to call it, that they're going to be using those, you know, two main sensors that I talked about, that are going to have their own dashboard on the computer, the way they read it, the way they interpret that data. I mean, they're all, for the cinnabars are going to be the same numbers, but they're going to showcase that a little bit differently. There's a lot of choices.
On the sensors, how many sensors do you need? If you have a series of six 60-acre fields, you know, precision graded, do I need a sensor in every field or maybe every block in that area, or is one suffice? How many do I need?
Well, you know, the nice answer we give to everything, it depends. But what's the type of situation you have? And this may be across topics, but for me, especially in water management and irrigation, and we're trying to conserve water, I always feel like we need to meet the grower where they're at and what they're willing to do. And so if I have this standard that I'm going to say, we need one sensor set per field, and that's what's going to give us the best reading, which is probably true, and then we can make timely irrigation, but it's not going to happen. I mean, you've got to install those. You got to read those. Not to answer your question directly, I think it depends on the situation. If you can get at least a per well, because you're scheduling off that, so that's going to help your scheduling aspect. If your spin takes 4 days and we have a sensor set in that last field on that last spin, and that's the one we're trying to target to not let, you know, that fourth day that we don't want to go past the threshold, then that's what we can schedule off of. And you can assume those same things in a nearby field, but we want to make sure planting date is the same, same crop type. But they're going to be pulling different moisture from that soil. And so those are the things to consider. What works best for you and what, just from a sensor adoption standpoint, let's start with one and let's just use it and work with us, and we can talk about what we're seeing, what the plant's doing, when we would initiate trigger, when would you normally initiate irrigation during that time, and then expand what you're comfortable from there.
I know y'all have, the programs that complement the sensor data that you collect, like the, you know, computerized hole selection programs.
Right.
But in my world, when we start talking about herbicides, there's just very few one-size-fits-all deals. And I hear Bobby talk on the phone, you know, riding the truck. His stuff is the same way with fertility. I mean, you could make some generalizations, but then at the end of the day, you're almost down to a field-by-field basis.
That's right. Yep.
So it just seems like with irrigation, the number of variables is just mind-boggling. You know, field size, field configuration, soil texture, crop, planting date.
Soil texture changes in a field.
Yeah, just an infinite number of combinations.
As far as sensors go, where you put that one snapshot sensor in that field, that's what you're taking. You know, that just like you take a soil sample in that field, that's what you're going to be looking at. And if you don't scatter it around or even in time, but that's where you're putting it. So you want to make sure the dominant soil type of where you put it, because that's going to dictate what you're seeing and what the rest of that field actually needs.
So one thing I've been looking at in a lot of y'all's data or what y'all doing, you said a while ago one sensor, and then earlier you said sensor set.
Yeah.
Explain to me a sensor set is.
So when I say sensor set, that's more what we're talking about with the watermarks, because it's one sensor, and however deep you put that into the ground, say 6 inches, you're going to be taking soil moisture readings at 6 inches. They're not stacked on top of each other. The recommendation we have is 6, 12, 24, 36. We do see plants and roots, you know, utilizing moisture down that deep. We tend to at least schedule off 6, 12, and 24, and you weight those average of those three sensors and schedule off those. But that's what I mean, because you don't want just the 6 inches and not know what's going down.
So when you say one sensor in a field, you really mean one sensor set?
That's right. And then Syntec is one sensor, and it's just stacked, and then they're going to have different readings based on different depths.
See, I am reading your blog
you
articles.
Are, there you go. And this is, you know, why I talked about how difficult it is for all the different options. We got the different types of soil sensors, and then you got the dashboards and the companies and the systems that each one use. And so what we've done to help with that, because I'll get a phone call from somebody and says, you know, my sensors are in the field. I'm looking at my fuel gauge, and it's on yellow. Do I need to irrigate? Yeah, I don't know what system they're using, what they're looking at, what type of sensor. And a lot of times they may not know what type of system they're looking at, what company they are. So what we've done is not only to help the grower see the different types of options that are out there, but for me as well, to help answer those questions so I can log in and see a different system so I can see what they're seeing, and we can work through that. But we have a soil moisture sensor demo set up right next to the West Farm. And we have several companies.
It's a whole slew of them out there.
Yeah, seven or eight. And so, you know, just from a hardware standpoint, you can go by and look at them and see what it's going to look like in the field.
All right, now, hold on. With the COVID, can they still come out there and look at them?
One at a time. But, I mean, this helps you get an idea of what that's going to look like. But what I'm more excited about is we're going to have that online, to where you can go through and hit each system. And I'm saying system, it's more or less like a company of utilizing these other sensors. You can click on theirs, read about what they offer, soil moisture sensors, but we have login, demo, and credentials, you know, password and username with each one of those. So you can log in, anyone can get on there and log in and see what those soil moisture sensors are reading out in that field.
Compare and contrast different platforms.
Which one do you like better? Which one do you like seeing? You know, whether there's the same type, different, because we have, you know, across Watermarks and Syntex, but which kind of platform do you like? Which one do you think is easier for you to understand and read through that you'd like? And so that's been a common question I've had is, well, what are my options? And it's just it's almost an endless conversation, and it's hard to have that conversation without showing them these things and letting them get the feel, because everybody's different. So I'm excited about that, and that's up and running on the website.
So it's, I mean, these are relatively new. I mean, I don't have any idea how many years that they've, you know, been available, but the popularity of them no doubt is increasing in our area. So compared with my world, you know, having a lot of different products, mm-hmm, is good, because it's competition, and you know, there's some price influence there by having competition. Can get complicated if I don't know all the names, right, which is similar to what you've been describing here. But on the water, on the moisture sensors, do you feel like this, are you still on the uptick as far as technology getting introduced into the market, or is it kind of stabilizing some?
Well, so I think that we have new technology coming in that we can utilize with what's existing, if that makes any sense. No, I don't know if we're having a whole lot of companies coming in from the telemetry standpoint. You can look at your phone, and you know that's been around for a while. It's just making it easier.
Right.
And so there's different companies that offer do different things, but it just seems to be a little bit easier for telemetry work to have a base station, and that may link up to several sensor sets or sensors out in the field. You have one box that's going to allow for you to look at it through that, and then kind of going from beyond. You mentioned the computerized hole selection, what we were working. So through the riser program that I take from what Kreutz was doing, and he validated and proved.
Kreutz doesn't like to admit it, but Bobby actually named the riser program.
Well, when Kreutz,
really?
Yes. To tell you the story, he was learning on the go, and we're sitting in there one day, and he's like, you know, got to find a name for this program. Got to find a name for this program. I'm like, well.
Except he was doing it like 3 octaves higher and maybe stomping his foot while he was saying it.
True. And I said, man, look, you're doing it all around a wellhead. Why don't you just call it riser? And now whatever he made riser stand for is all on him.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, yeah, no, and I'm taking it's a good standing program. And I'm learning, too. As we came over here, like I said, last summer.
Y'all don't have near as many whales in Texas.
And it's, you know, everything's different. And you you come over here and say, all right, we need to be more efficient on irrigation. We need to reduce the amount of water we're pumping out and the type of irrigation we have. And from a national standpoint, furrow irrigation is looked down upon as far as efficiency goes. And, you know, there's a lot of reasons, and we've talked about this too. There's a lot of reasons why we have beds. And it's not just for pushing water across from my standpoint of irrigation. And I coming from Texas, I didn't have drain, at least from where I grew up, drainage was not a big issue.
Wood posting, you say the top three things were, Jason? Drainage.
Drainage.
And drainage.
Yeah.
And drainage.
Yeah.
I was going to say it in a posting voice, and then I had second thoughts. That's why I hesitated.
But, you know, the more I went through and assessed and kind of tried to learn what was going on, you can make, and kind of going back and forth, but you can make furrow irrigation efficient, relatively efficient to what we're doing. The hardest of irrigation is your conveyance system is also the same method you're trying to get the water to infiltrate into the soil. And so a lot of these conservation practices that we're talking about, whether it's, you know, reduced till or you know,
till water recovery.
Yeah, and you're hindering your advance, your water going down that furrow, and you're obstructing that. And so it's just a completely different mindset. But it was, you know, pretty obvious that there's a lot of valid reasons why we have furrows here. And it's not just for the irrigation standpoint. And utilizing those tools that Kreutz, you know, validated and proved to work from a riser standpoint, computerized hole selection, to me is the step one. I mean, I just think it's not going to be there. I understand there's going to be situations and fields where they just, it doesn't click for whatever reason, but by and large that's going to fit most, and it's going to make it more efficient. You're going to be able to, it's really creating a irrigation plan for yourself. The main goal is to be able to get that water out across all furrows at the same time, but it's also giving you a time of what it's estimated to water out. And so from a timing standpoint, you've got a plan. Is your sets too long? You do need to reduce sets and things like that. And then, you know, we talked about the sensors quite a bit, and then surge irrigation. And so from an extension standpoint, I've really tried to focus on, let's just proven, I don't know how much more research on farm that we need to actually do on those. Just pushing those for adoption standpoint. So I'm trying to get more sensors out, utilizing surge, and just get them out and working with the farmers and helping program those and try to attack some of those barriers that may be the reason for not trying, at least trying some of those. And then what we've added this year is in rice too, but across soybean and corn, is some automation, utilizing sensors to trigger that. But what does automated valves and how we can skip from one set to the next seamlessly, whether it's in the middle of the night or not, where we can go across there and really with less watering time and be more efficient.
Well, as Bobby established earlier, I've been around here for a while, but I think
most people that listen know that you're an old hand.
I think it's pretty remarkable. I can remember the first irrigation that we had on my dad's place. Mm-hmm. I mean, aside from watering rice, I mean, I remember when we didn't have any irrigation on the row crops. So to go from where they started to where they are now, I mean, it's remarkable. You mentioned the efficiency of fur irrigation. I mean, I think if you've been around for any length of time, there's no question that we are orders of magnitude more efficient. I know that field right here on the station, one of the production fields on the station, drove by it yesterday and they had started watering it. And I thought, man, that water is running slow. You know, it's only moved so far. Well, then I went by this morning, and of course, it's watered out, but there's also not a ditch full of water at the bottom. So, that's you know, in years gone by, we would have just poked holes and gone on and then come back and cut it off.
Well, I think, you know, where everybody gets confused in this is you were talking about conveyance systems, and we're using a conveyance system that they used in Mesopotamia.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Kreutz has said that before. Knowing how to be efficient. You know, old technology doesn't mean it's bad technology. It's how can we use that technology better? And I think what you and Kreutz have done is show people we can be really efficient in how we do this just by making one or two little tweaks.
Oh, yeah. You can. You can.
I also, you know, appreciate hearing you say that, you know, it's not a one-size-fits-all and that this doesn't work everywhere. And you mentioned the surge valves. And I've always thought that, you know, because so many fields are just not, especially for the, you call them oscillating surge valves where they go one way.
Yeah, the butterfly valve, yeah.
Yeah, so there's way more fields that are not set up for that than are, even if that field, you know, has been leveled to some degree or even precision graded. I mean, you got to have your water outlets in the right spot for something like that to work. So I appreciate you saying that, you know, this doesn't work on every single acre every time, but you know, if you've got a couple fields it can work on, you know, then you move the needle some.
That's right, yeah. I mean, if it fits a certain situation, let's try it. Try it out there, and let's not strap a surge valve on just because we can do it. So it probably the least adopted one out of, when we talk about those three things we discussed, cost and management, but also it doesn't fit every field. I would say soil moisture sensors and computerized hole selection does.
Yeah.
And so that's a big player too.
So what do you feel like, Not the next big thing, but, you know, as it moves forward, what is another step?
Yeah, and that's where my thought process, as kind of you're talking about Kreutz trying to learn on the go, too. I felt like things were done a lot differently here and for completely valid reasons. And so I trying to assess what was going on, trying to learn as much as I can and reprogram some of my thoughts. At the same time, trying to, from a scientific standpoint, a research standpoint, where can we go from here? And just there's some technology. It's the same conversation that you just mentioned with furrow irrigation. There's furrow irrigation, and that's been around for a long time, but there's other technologies that are being developed that can be utilized in furrow irrigation. And what are those? And soil moisture sensors and things like that have been shown. And so what I'm currently doing and on farm, looking at automation. And so can we control pump automation? Can we turn that pump on and then turn it off when it's done? And can we move from one set to the next? And, you know, if there's four sets or however we go through that seamlessly through closed valve, automated valves. And that makes you nervous because you want to see that water coming out and you want to see that water reach the tail ditch and then you want to go across. But you've got that time, a lot of irrigators know how long that's going to come across the end. You got your pipe planner plan that can be integrated into that. And then if you can start that system, pump starts on based on our sensor readings and then initiates irrigation and say it waters out at 2 a.m., it's going to open the next valve, close the current valve, and go on to the next. Anything as far as these practices, these technologies, is first questions, what's the cost? And does it pay? I mean, even beyond that, before we can evaluate, is it the cost and does it pay, is does it work? And so that's what I'm playing with right now. Because if it's not reliable, especially from an automated standpoint, you know, you're not there to fix everything a lot of the times. And so we want to make sure it works.
Well, it sounds like there's a lot more moving parts to that, and moving parts break.
That's right.
I'm sure you'll be getting that information to us as soon as you feel like that's ready to go out to the public and say, we believe in this and it's going to work.
It's definitely an evaluation stage.
All right, Drew, well, we certainly appreciate you spending part of your afternoon with us. Guys, if y'all need to get in touch with Drew, if you don't have his number, if you have one of my, either my number or Bobby's number, get in touch with us.
Well, Dale, Drew, just give us your number.
There you go. 979-255-7018. Please call me. Happy to help.
There you go. Drew has been a big asset to our team, and we've enjoyed working with him so far, and look forward to working with him in the future. So thanks a lot, Drew. And we're going to jump off now, guys. But y'all know, if y'all need anything, you're more than welcome to give us a call.
The Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast is produced by the Mississippi State University Extension Service.